Caravane. Jolifanto bambla o fali bambla, grossigam fahabla horum. Egiga gormen, higo bloiko rusulu huju, hola ka hola la la, anglago boom, blago boom, blago boom, bosso fataka. Champaula usa olobo ejetata gorum eshigazunbada ulubuzubudu ulubuzubudu tumba baum kusagama baum. You might say, what was that? It's a very serious crowd tonight here. That poem was first written, composed, and performed 100 years ago, February in 1916, in Zurich, in Switzerland, as part of an event called the Cabaret Voltaire, which was one of the first events that really put a Dada, the art movement, into the world. And that piece was written by Hugo Ball and performed by him. And this year I love Ball's work. I'm very influenced by the Dadaists. And this year being the 100th year since that movement and that poem and other poems, I've been performing some of that work because it deserves to stay alive, I think. It reminds me of the physicality, the corporeality of language. I noticed, I was sitting right at the back there, and I noticed the sound can be funny depending where you're sitting in the room. So if you have trouble hearing or catching articulation, feel free to move. I don't know what it is exactly. It's a bit of an odd room acoustically. So this is from Flutter Tongue 3, Disarray. All around a babble of possibilities, idiosyncratic, synced to this unfamiliar system, the poem. Crash, so fresh, a radish breaking on the tongue. Tang, eros there, and in the cottonwoods that exploding exultation. Seed fluff floating everywhere like dryer lint, so right. But don't break this day's rules for breaking. Down. Measure with a stick, thrower. Stick to it in the unlikable universe. A footing. Readers growling, roisterous, roasted. All this cooked up stuff. Singed, brute, bleak. Get singing. Let the throat hear. Suddenly struck by the food imagery in there, and we just exited with a recipe for gumbo. So that's more food stuff. Yeah. I like the apple juice, by the way. Thank you very much, Deanna. And I should say thank you to Deanna. We've been in long dialogue about this night, and thank you to the Atwater reading series. I read here a number of years ago, actually, on that stage, which at the time always seemed so high. So I'm glad we're on the ground now. Flutter Tongue series. Flutter Tongue is an Uber title I've used for a series of books, six to this moment, which grew out of my notion that my work was all really just one work, regardless of there being sometimes discrete pieces or whatever form the work took. I feel that my work is really just one exploration of methods of composition with language. So I keep writing these Flutter Tongue pieces. This is from Flutter Tongue 4, Adagio for the Pressured Surround, and this is a book-length poem. I'll just read an excerpt. Make the poem a hammer ringing. The story of the father breaks down in the weeping chair. Sublime. Terror. Magpie struts along a railing, parade of black and white and iridescent green. Magpie is a special delivery messenger. Anything goes. Everything goes. There, by the weathered wagon, my boy discovers a common yellow throat, black masked and olive backed, soft and dead. Born unto burial under the pink rock at the top of the hill. So much other becoming, battering wind, word bluster tumbling in my head. The failed quest for syntactic rupture. A black dog is a spring coil, bounding and bouncing at the door on your return. The letter B. You walk with your mother on your left. Ahead, your son walks with his mother. And in a time beyond yours, your son's lover and son. Echoes. Eternities. Hesitate. But not now. Grass bent, flaxen, and patches of green moss crunch underfoot as I walk up the ridge for a better view of the round room where I hunch behind the glass, trying to forget myself and uncover a word. Lichen light. Never seen one before. Cute cat weasel. Find out later it's a marten, Martes americana, related to the ermine, skunk, and mink, and is a threatened species, even endangered in some areas. As it lopes, browny russet, perk-eared along the log, I am held in awe, reminded of my ignorance. You are faint in a glass, but wish to disappear as you disappeared to him, to write the poem of disappearance of the self. The sallow shadows I chase with a match. Author gone other, automatic pilot, but the craft is ancient and without remote control. Any event is a fog of a million droplets. You are faint in the glass, but the forest is strong in its song to you. It rustles toward you. It speaks as you are, glazed and fading with the light. Uttering. In the rear view mirror of description. The poet Jerry Shikitani cooked fedua, a wonderful dish of fine pasta and a soupy seafood stew spiced with saffron, in my kitchen in Saskatoon in 1996. The dish is more typically found on the east coast of Spain. The manifesto is buried in the words surround. That tree is your blood. eggshell thinness of everything. The chair I will be unable to sit in, its dark engulfing. Or the lightless, tiny, rat-infested cell Maher Arar suffered in solitary confinement for 10 months in Syria in 2003. Rock, its speechless tail. Because of Emmett's arm hooked around my thigh, his head resting on my lap, my hand cupping his forehead. The forest's filigree of morning song. In softening and stretch, the wound yields. In that poem, you heard Emmett. You heard me mention Emmett. That's my son. Way back when he was very young and didn't sleep at night, and I was the kind of night shift guy, rambling around with him in my arms in the dark, I somehow managed to write a book, and I called it The Book of Emmett. And I will read one piece from it, and I'm slightly belated here. It was his 21st birthday yesterday, so this is kind of belated. I already wished him happy birthday, but this is another kind of belated gesture to my son, Emmett. Yeah, did I say that the book is called Fluttertongue Book 2, The Book of Emmett? So. That summer of clustered starfish static in rock cavities beside Active Pass. That gone summer slipped to the underside of memory until my son points at the wet sidewalk 2,000 landlocked kilometers eastward and says, "Purple starfish." I try to explain distance until my knee aches, until I realize that starfish can shine anywhere. I should have known. I have read poetry and about it and know something of meaning outside words, of association and leaping. This morning is too stiff, fluid in the joint hampering the torque. Though the sun warms and the leaves are a stunning backlit russet gleam, summer is done. Poetry is closed up in the books on my shelf. I have avoided it, caught in cavities of necessary duty, in the rush and narrowing. Only one thing is sure. Propelled, I know nothing of propulsion, except for the ache. I want to give up right here. Birds flicker in the tree's skeleton, sparrow and nuthatch. They are 100 times more energetic than I, despite their hollow bones. Starfish glistens. His bones must be soft, hugging the sidewalk at the center of Emmett's transfixed eye. Definitely purple. Just a brief comment about form, I guess. That piece is a prose poem, and I've been interested in exploring not only methods of composition, but the forms that a poem can take, and the page as a field of as a visual field. So you can't see what my pages look like, but they do look dense or less dense, different kinds of play going on, not only with language, but with the visuality as well. Yes, okay. This is from Fluttertongue Book 5, Everything Appears to Shine with Mossy Splendor. And it really, it's comprised, each piece is two texts, prose poem at the top and a kind of an ongoing narrative about moss that actually reads linearly through the whole book. I'll give you I'll read the prose poem and give you a glimpse of the little section at the bottom that is part of the continuum about moss. This is called Her Cheek of Lux. A pleasure aroused in the mind's privacy dwarfs that mind, fills the room. Light blooms, shreds the walls even to closed eyes. Soft and round, the subtlest hill, or a peach just ripe and rose-buffed, felt in the loin. The gravel truck snorts down the road, kicking dust, gusty tail spreading, chuffing over the split-rail fence that offers no protection. Sprays enough to scrim Eros's invisible pulse into oblivion. Brown grasses in winter huff out their air and lie down to wait, though some will rise no more. Turn a phrase without a signal flicker. It's his shoulder, just below the blade he remembers, her softness there, her lips there. Fever and writhe, abuse of the apostrophe. A cruise ship fills with fans of poetry who cheer on free verse, internal rhyme, parsing and parsley, disjunctive sage thought, sonority, pinot noir, the I am of God, haiku with sake, and a stop at every poet's port, even if an island or inland or interred. What a lark, a meadow full. What a fan dance. He can't turn away as the shoulder aches its loss, a fruit of palest yellow, its droplets at the corner of his mouth. Now, let's talk character. Moss as weed, moss as contortionist, at that, with yellow parts amidst the green and character con parts the green. Now that, with the title of that poem, Her Cheek of Lux, I'll just say was, all the titles in that book are stolen from another very fine poet, an American named Elizabeth Willis, and she granted me permission to extract phrases from her poems in a couple of books to use as titles for my poems. It's a thing that poets do, you know, one poet referring to another poet and borrowing from another poet and all that sort of thing. So, anyways, if you stumble upon the work of Elizabeth Willis sometime, go for it. A few years ago, I read an interview, or an essay, I guess, by Italo Calvino, and I was taken by something that he said in it, and this prompted me to something. But what he said was, I would like to edit a collection of tales consisting of one sentence only, or even a single line. So I took this as a good starting point, and as a result, have ended up writing something called 50 Short Novels for People on the Go, and seemed fitting for our times, I thought, although some of them are longer than a Twitter feed. But my idea was that I would write his one-sentence tales that he asked for, and so I have 50 of them. 50 short novels for people on the go, and I'll read one of the shorter ones and one of the longer ones. This is one of the shorter ones. It's called Brush Strokes. A woman painting a landscape beside a lake looks up from her work to discover, close to her, on the shore, a bear, which she does not include in the scene as she continues painting. And this second one is called Deception, a Novel. As you form the intention of reading and pause before the bookshelf, you confront a host of possibilities, but once you choose a novel, in this case, the novel itself is the first character you meet, and you agree to accept that character, a character full of him or herself, and not without reason, as she is all-powerful, containing and controlling what is revealed or hidden, and defining the process of your path through the labyrinthine depths, a path at times clear and in motion, and at other times static and perplexing. And on this occasion, the novel leads you to a library with unending rows of shelves of thousands of books, and you wander there full of anxiety caused not by the ache of loneliness, but by the vast store of knowledge which, no matter where you begin nor how fast you read, can only be penetrated to the shallowest level, barely skimming the surface, even if you choose only books with near identical code numbers, ensuring related content or authorship, because with every book you read, the list of the unread grows, and how can you bear the weight of ignorance and keep pursuing knowledge that is found between the covers of books, and especially since you've become uncertain that this is a real library or just an image in a dream or story, and so where does it begin and end, before or after the novel you have decided to read, and which speaks to you now clearly and perceptibly from these pages, wearing a pair of glasses and a pencil over the ear, or a brown tweed jacket with an indecipherable lapel pin, or blubbery lips seeping a breath and knowing better than you what you're looking for, until it occurs to you that it doesn't matter, that you can give yourself over to this tale, that you can follow it regardless of costume and trait through representations of dream or reality or just plain illusion, because you are willing and there is nothing to fear, as this is a place where your body is safe, yet you sense that your mind could be endangered, though it is you who chooses, pulling down the book that attracts you by its red spine, yellow letters, spelling out the words, deception, a novel, because you admire the look and you like the way the object feels in your hand, its fullness promising something you long for, a conversation, a journey, an affair with a handsome face, a hat cocked over one eye, a world-worn complexion, a nervous smile, a mouthful of words that tongue into you in the first embrace. They're so much fun. I will do two pieces, I guess, here. I've got the motor going here. This is Lurch. Oh, this is from the latest Fluttertongue, Book 6, Emanations, which was published last year by Book Thug of Toronto. Lurch. Beach, laced, waist high, bitten by plastic jagged beads, blandished by platelets, jerry-slagged up from polymer sea, Lord have mercy. Stuff above gleams, entices in sights, glissades and traps and creases, brand game of games, card flip, telespectacle, gaper captive to the flush of light, garbage carboniferous and flutter of likeness, cardiograph floods, telos speculum, brass gamma of gamma, 2-for-1 today, only last chance. The beholder swears by it, buys it, wears it, caddies it, weeps it. The believer swerves on its pyramid trip, tips queasy stomachs, toss up in hollow churn, tilts the quiet stoner in a Pyrex triplex flood, a gush over old lives and newborn whose houses sink under bad weather, bad debt, leaky writs, nifty howlers sizzle under balconies, fluorescence gyrates over lighthouse decisions, quick, past the broom, just the handle might do, its skinny buoyancy, handy bristles to float, to swift particulate off the junk, to flourish, to swink, passe off the jupon, slaps bureaucracy, hard-boiled broadbrim, natty dealer enters the press scrum, hanky-panky dodge, patent shoes, tap a brisk rum step across, tile waft a buff snare trail of garb status, Armani morning jacket, cardboard shack, a marsupial decline, a marked deck, attrition cells, everything must go, chin held just so in pause, in poise as if a crown above, a posture lulls as if a crucifixion overhead, with ceremonies, banner and bane, postponement and delay, with certificates, bonsai, and banjo, chinchilla heard it just so in pawn shop, in pokeweed, all cuffs and gems behind the starch, below starling murmurations, all guff and dirty wrists, all the collars sullied, the suits a ragged up clown, all disarming wrynecks, the diamond card, the ace in hand, in a blink, flicks up a cuff, a hangman, cardiology. Casino camera scans feed back through lens, through tinted one-way glass to screens beside the case of semi-automatic guns, beside the seminal avenacious gusts, through titillated opalescent gleams, surveillance framed and digitized, paradise's scrutiny en route through the rubble heap. Paragraphs are freed from poetry's dilapidated sculpture enshrouded in rubric heartburn. Here or there, defibrillations, thievery and therapy, beside mottled lawns, cons, bus bombs, Bushmaster concession bonanzas, waves grind on the buried beach, slough the cabled beadwork debris, spill bloom and decay, the tune of the tide, its stack and retreat, treasure and theft, stake and retype, rape and repeat, repeal and restake, waves stack and retreat, treasure and theft, treasure and theft. And to finish off, because I have a little more breath in me, hope I have a lot more breath in me, actually. This is not a pen moving on paper. Well, I guess it was, but this poem looks like this. And again, it's from 1916, around that data kickoff time. This is called Optophonetic Poem by the Austrian poet Raoul Hausmann, written in 1916, 100 years ago, before most of us were born. Yeah.